Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope your week is going well. I hope you, your friends, your family, your coworkers, I hope everyone in your world is staying strong. Hope you're all staying healthy in this time. And you know, I realize that sports, they're getting ready to be in that slow time of year. But we do still have a few things that are going right now. Of course, Major League Baseball is going along right now. Starting to see some managers getting fired already as we are seeing teams get impatient with how their seasons are going. But don't forget, the Stanley Cup Final begins tonight. Obviously, I am heavily invested in that, as my Colorado Avalanche are hoping to win their third Stanley Cup in franchise history. And, you know, even if you're not an Avs fan, we get a really, really good matchup because they are going to be facing the back-to-back defending champions, the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are actually going for their third Stanley Cup in a row. That should be a really, really fun series. You have the young, talented Avalanche facing the veteran team that has been so clutch in the most important moments. That should be a really, really fun series to watch. Plus, the NBA Finals are headed for Game 6 tomorrow night in Boston. The Golden State Warriors have now taken a 3-2 lead over the Boston Celtics after winning that so important Game 5. We know how many times Game 5 does end up dictating who wins it all. But Game 5 was a little bit weird. Steph Curry couldn't throw it in the ocean. But unfortunately for Boston, they just turned the ball over so much. And it feels like they really wasted a bad night by Steph Curry. But I'll be honest, if anyone tells you that they know how that series is going to go, I don't know, they might be lying, because who knows from one game to the next what's going to happen in that crazy series. And you know, we've talked about it here on The Dose. While the NBA playoffs have been largely, well, honestly, pretty boring, if I'm being honest, this is turning into at least a compelling series, which is good, because we're not really getting close games, but we aren't quite sure of how they are going to go, which at least makes it interesting. We are getting some really good performances, I'll give it that. Obviously, Steph Curry is playing really well, aside from that Game 5 situation where he just couldn't shoot it. But we're seeing big performances from guys like Andrew Wiggins, Jason Tatum, Klay Thompson seems to be finding his game the further this series goes, not just with the shooting. Starting to play a little bit of defense as well, starting to see some people step up. And look, you know, I don't do a lot of talking about myself on the show. That's just not what we do. We talk about sports. I don't talk about my own athletic accomplishments. I'm not one to toot my own horn. That's just not me. However, I do feel it necessary to point out that in these 2022 NBA Finals so far, now this is just through five games, but I have only scored 5 less points per game than NBA All-Star Draymond Green. And get this, I have yet to foul out of a single game. So yeah, beep beep, kids. I'm going to go ahead and toot my own horn. I am that close to contributing what Draymond Green is contributing so far through 5 games. Now, Game 6 is tomorrow night. Of course, we all want to know, can Boston survive another elimination game? Can they force a Game 7? It will go back to the Bay Area, but can they force a Game 7? Remember this. Boston has faced elimination already twice this year against Milwaukee and against Miami. We will see if they can survive again tomorrow night. But I realize it is summer now. Things are starting to slow down. We've got a few things we want to keep up on before we get into the really slow time of summer where we're just praying and waiting for those NFL training camps to open. That will be here before we know it. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com, where we have new articles going up every week. We have links to the podcast. We have links to the video. And yes, We even have links to the Daily Dose gear. If you need a t-shirt, you need a sweatshirt, you need a coffee mug, whatever you may need, that is available. You can find links to that gear over at DailyDoseSports.com. In fact, I actually dropped an article this week talking a little bit about that Stanley Cup final that is coming between the Colorado Avalanche and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Just kind of comparing those two teams, but it's a quick read. Trust me, you'll want to stop by there. And, you know, every once in a while, we do have an article coming out from Young Jimmy, our featured columnist. You never know what that might be on, but make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week and checking out what is going on over there. Hey, today on the show, I have got a guest that, I'll be honest, I am really looking forward to talking to today, because this is a young guy that has managed to build a sports business. And now, you know, with all that name, image, and likeness stuff that's going on, he is beginning to move into that realm as well. I am very, very interested to hear his story. He has a partner that has a really fascinating story as well. And I want to talk to him a little about this NIL stuff, see if he can make some sense of what is going on, where this might be going. So let's jump into that right now. Also, you may hear me say I was going to cut something out of the interview. It's still in. It wasn't an oversight. I just didn't think it needed to be cut out. So let's go over and jump into that right now. Joining us today on the Daily Dose, we have a very special guest that is doing some work in the world of collegiate sports. And, you know, with the way all this stuff is changing so fast, I thought it would be fun to have him on and discuss some of the changes that we are seeing right now in college athletics, where he thinks all this stuff might be going, because I'll be honest, right now it is hard to tell where this stuff is going. Daniel Hennis is the CEO of a company called Engage that is going to be telling us much, much more about that company today on the show as we dig into all this. But Daniel has a very, very interesting story as to how he got here, and I want to talk to him about that first. Daniel, first of all, welcome to the Daily Dose. I appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Daniel, you are a Colorado kid, I believe. Yes. Where did you go to high school?
I went to Kent, Denver. Big fan of Kent. I would say it was formative 4 years. Yes.
So that's funny. Were you there? And I can edit this out. Funny. Yeah. Were you there when Mike Dunlap's kid was there?
No, I was not. I was not there when he was there. I was there 2015 to 2019.
You're way younger. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I actually coached against. We went to a tournament one time and found ourselves against Kent Denver at Smoky Hill. And
that's
I was like,
because we're 3A.
You're 3A. Why are we playing Kent? It was a Metro tournament and they threw us in there with Kent, and we beat Kent, but we didn't play that good. Yeah. So we beat them by like 40 or what, like it's not close.
Yeah.
But we go in the locker room and we're chewing our kids out. Like, you aren't, and they're, coach, we won by 40. What do you want? It doesn't matter.
That's really funny. Yeah, no, we were good in our division, but we should not have been playing 5A, 4A,
and
5A.
Always really good in like lacrosse, really good in soccer, really good in like hockey. And very, very good in those. You graduate from Kent Denver. You're making your choice. Where am I going to go to college? Where did you choose? What schools maybe were you considering when you came out?
Yeah, I mean, so I ended up at USC. It's funny, I loved USC. It wasn't even really on my radar. I really wanted to go to Georgetown, didn't get in. And then it sort of came down, there are a bunch of schools I applied to, but then it sort of came down to USC and Michigan. Michigan I had toured and loved and liked a lot, good sports program, everything.
Sure.
Blah, blah, blah. USC, I applied there because my college counselor told me to apply there. She was, in retrospect, I'm very glad she did. Right. And then once I got into USC, I had so many people in sports, entertainment, whatever, tell me like, that's where you should go. So went out and visited it, loved the school, and the rest sort of just like worked out. The decision ended up being really, really, really easy as soon as I toured the campus. It was like, I toured Michigan in March and there was snow on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone was saying, oh, this is super nice. It's really not bad. I toured USC in February and it was 60 degrees and people were apologizing to me about how cold it was. So I was like, you know what? I can get used to this.
That's funny. So you were talking about going into sports coming out of, what were you planning on majoring in? What were you planning on doing?
Yeah, so planning on majoring in business, obviously always had sort of an interest in sports. You know, I started a sports business club at Kent, which helped just get me connected to a lot of great people. So always kind of had an interest in it. Wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do. Yeah. Thought I wanted to work for it for maybe like this back in high school. Thought I wanted to work for a team maybe for a little bit in high school. But I think for me, like my passion has always been about like working with the athletes and working on the talent side. So I thought maybe I wanted to be an agent, but then got to know how that industry really worked. Yeah. And even more now, I know even more now, and I'm even more glad I don't do that. So I went in kind of just like open to whatever, wanting to do something in sports.
So you arrive on campus at USC.
Yeah.
You get your roommate assignment.
Yes.
For one, I heard that you had a dorm with 8 guys in it.
It was a good setup, though. So the roommate thing at USC obviously worked out really well for me. So it was an 8-person suite. It was like 2 people a room, 4 rooms. We had our own bathrooms, own living room. Really good, like really good freshman year setup, like classic USC, like really good freshman year setup. So I had my roommate. I had like messaged with in advance. So I know who my direct roommate was.
Okay.
One of my suite mates, though, you find out kind of like a couple weeks before, you get a list of your suite mates and you get to read a little bit about them. And one of my suite mates was Jake Olson, and his bio is like, "Hi guys, I'm Jake. I'm on the football team." And I'm thinking like, "Oh, that's awesome. Like young kid in the sport, couldn't be better." And it's like, "I'm also blind and I have, you know, a guide dog Quebec." I'm like, okay, I ignore it. Like this kid's hilarious. Like, he realizes how stupid these things are. Because even though I'm a huge sports fan, I never heard his story, even though it had been on ESPN a bunch. I never heard his story. So I literally totally ignored it. And then like probably 2 days before we were about to move in, I got a text from my roommate. And he was saying, he goes, "Daniel, you think we should make Jake pay for the TV?" I go, "Why would he not pay? Of course he should split." For the record, I ended up paying for the TV every year anyway. So I don't know what happened there. But I go, "Of course he should pay for it. Why would he not, you know, split a portion of the TV?" And my roommate goes, "Because he's blind." I'm like, "Oh, like that's real? What?
He really is?"
Like, yeah, he's like, "What?" So then, of course, like I'm reading about it and Googling it and everything. I'm like, "Wow, what a fascinating kid. You know, never met a blind, but wasn't sure what it was going to be like. I can't leave my stuff out. I can't do this. I can't do that." You know, obviously met him first day of college, and we became, you know, really, really good friends right away. And I made a joke and I was kind of like, "You know, Jake, when you practice for the first time at USC, like it's going to be a story." He goes, "No, it's not. Like no one's going to care." I'm like, "Here's the deal. If you practice at USC and it's a story, I get to tag along to your interviews as your like PR guy as a joke."
Okay.
And Jake goes, "Fine," probably thinking nothing of it. Then like a little after Labor Day, it was like a whole battle to get him cleared. You know, believe it or not, the NCAA did not have a lot of experience dealing with blind football.
I wouldn't think so.
So yeah, it was like a whole battle to get him cleared, all these things. Eventually he gets cleared and he's like, "Okay, I you're right." He's like, "I have some interviews, like put on a suit and you can come do my interviews with me." So I go to tag along, you know, freshman year of college. And as like entirely as a joke, Jake introduces me to like the USC, you know, sports information people as his PR guy. They have no, I'm 18. Like they have no, and
right.
I'm like, "Great, here's his schedule. What's your email? Like, we'll start sending you everything." So, you know, like 2 sweetest words in English language by default. Like I kind of just took over all of that stuff for Jake and really grew from there. And obviously, you know, we're still close friends. We still work together and everything. And he was my first sort of quote unquote client. And it just kind of, the business sort of grew from there.
So for those who don't know the story, maybe you haven't heard, Jake Olson had permanently lost his eyesight when he was 12 years old.
Yep.
He had numerous bouts with, I think it's called retinoblastoma cancer.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, it's and, a very rare form of cancer.
Yeah, and ended up losing, you know, sight in both eyes. But Jake grew up a diehard USC fan. He's a Huntington Beach kid. He was in the Trojans locker room here and there. He kind of got to know it at the time, head coach Pete Carroll. And Pete had heard about his medical condition and said, "Hey, you know, come on," you know, brought him in and let him kind of, you know, be there. Jake ends up getting a scholarship for disabled athletes. He's accepted to USC. He gets a chance to kind of, you know, be on the football team. Now, this might be an odd question for you, but how nervous were you to be suite mates?
Oh, so nervous. Are you kidding me?
Like, that's a different situation. Yeah.
Yeah. I had no clue what I could say. I mean, I was, you know, could I, am I going to offend? Unfortunately, nothing offends Jake. He's like the funniest kid. Like, oh, I love nothing him. Offends him. Yeah. But you have no idea what you can and can't say. I was worried, like, can I say things like, did you see that or whatever? Did you do this
right,
or do that?
Right.
But I realized, you know, I realized early on that I was going to get along with him because he's a huge sports fan. When I really realized we were going to get along is when we were watching, it was like the first week of the NFL season, we were watching a game and they called pass interference. And Jake goes, that's not pass interference. I'm like, how the hell? Like, you couldn't see it. He goes, it's just, it's not pass interference. And when I realized, like, he was stubborn enough to argue about right. what things looked like, I'm like, okay, we're going to get along very well. So yes, I was definitely nervous, but that probably lasted all of about like 3 hours. Like, and then
that
it
is awesome.
We're both huge Chicago Cubs fans. Like, the nerves dissipated very quickly.
That is awesome. It sounds bad, but I'm glad to hear that he just has that attitude that you just are like, oh, no, you're yeah. comfortable with the guy. He's just a good guy. No,
he makes blind jokes. All, like, we have a lot of fun with it. Yeah.
Okay, coming back. So Daniel has now met Jake Olson. Oh, but everything in their world is about to change and flip completely upside down. And bizarrely, so much is going to change because of a rapper named Lil Romeo. We are going to get to so much more with Daniel Hennis when we get back. So on September 2nd, 2017, USC is playing Western Michigan in the fourth quarter season opener. They're pulling away. They're blowing them out. Yeah. Late interception gets taken back for a touchdown, and we get a chance for Jake to go in and take the long snap for an extra point. Delivery is perfect. He's mobbed by his teammates. The crowd is chanting his name. Everybody goes crazy. But, Daniel, then things begin to blow up because the next week, you go with Jake to New York. You're appearing on Good Morning America, daytime talk shows.
Yeah,
you've got
I'm
college game. That
I'm tagging along.
But you're tagging along and you're
helping
him out.
The number one thing I hear is get out of the shot. But yeah, he's appearing on all those shows. Yeah.
But the media comes calling for Jake and you're kind of helping him through what had to be this really, really overwhelming process.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that time and the travel and all that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so we've been playing for so to go back real quick to rewind. Leading up to that moment, right, one of the first things we did when he got to USC, and this was back in 2015, is he'd been doing a lot of motivational speaking ever since he was 12 and the first ESPN story came out and Coach Carroll took him in. He'd been doing a lot of motivational speaking and stuff ever since he was 12. Okay. So the first thing we did when we got to USC after we took over as his manager is he actually got a waiver from the NCAA. It's called the double life rule. It's basically because Little Romeo played basketball at USC while being a rapper, the NCAA actually created a little known rule that basically says if you're famous outside of your sport before becoming a college athlete, you can continue to make money off of your name, image, and likeness. So back in 2015, we got a waiver. And this, again, I had no like this was all USC compliance that was just like, we're going to handle this for you. So they were amazing. So we got a waiver that allowed Jake to continue to do his motivational speaking, to continue to do his appearances because, you know, Lil Romeo of all people paved the way. So I started managing his speaking engagements and appearances leading up to after his sophomore year ended. We got a feeling that junior year was going to be the year where he was going to get a chance to play. So we started planning. We wanted to make sure there was media to cover the moment. We wanted to make sure everything was in place. So we called our friends at ESPN and we're like, look, here's the deal. And what we told them is we're like, here's what we know. We know Jake is going to get into his game. We know he's going to get into a game his junior year. And we know it's not going to be week one. So if you want to do a long sort of feature piece on Jake on E60, because that's who our friend worked for, you know, you can come, you can shoot in the preseason in August. You can shoot some B-roll footage during the game week one against Western Michigan. And then he'll snap later in the season. We'll give you a heads up and you can come out for that game. So like, sounds great. So we had a full on ESPN camera crew, that whole shoot. I mean, I could do an entire podcast episode about that, the chaos of that whole shoot.
Why? What was going on?
Oh, I mean, just, you know, between not getting like between USC, not getting the right permits and everything. Long story short, I think my USC, the way it works in the dorms is you have to each, you know, room, like each person in the room gets a couple guest passes that they can use to bring friends in.
Okay.
And USC hadn't permitted anything. They forgot to like get the permits for ESPN to shoot. So ESPN's like, well, where can we film? I'm like, well, actually USC just opened their brand new village. I have friends who live there. It's like a really beautiful setup. Why don't we film there? So like, okay, we don't have any permits. So I'm like, don't worry, my friends will guest you in. So I had literally my friends come down from like the second floor and guest in. Like, I'm talking like an 8-person ESPN camera crew with like trolleys of camera equipment. Oh, and the person who's like running security was so confused at like what's going on. And we had, so it was a whole, like, there was so much back and forth, but basically we had put the things in place to have sort of like a documentary crew there to capture it. We were told explicitly it's not going to happen week one. So we're doing all this filming. The game's on week one, game is September 2nd. I was planning on going home. It was my 21st birthday on September 4th. I was planning on going home right after that game to, you know, celebrate my birthday with my, see my family, see my brother, sure, all of those things. Thursday of that week, so that would have been August 31st, Jake comes back to me. He comes back from practice and he goes, I think you need to cancel your flight. And I'm like, why? He goes, well, Coach Helton told me I'm going to snap. And he's like, what? I was like, what? Are you serious? He goes, yeah, he told me I'm going to play. I'm like, that's awesome. We need to tell ESPN. And Jake goes, well, no. You can't tell ESPN because Coach Helton wants to keep it super under wraps. He doesn't want anyone to know. He wants it to be quiet. So you can't tell ESPN. So the next morning we show up because ESPN was there shooting what they thought was B-roll. So the next morning we show up to like meet the camera crew and everything. And it's super awkward because we've been told Jake is snapping and we can't tell ESPN.
Oh, no. But
there was a miscommunication where sports information told ESPN that Jake was snapping, but that they couldn't tell Jake because it was going to be a surprise to Jake. So it was like literally something out of a movie where we sat.
Everybody knows and has to pretend they don't know.
Where we sat there literally in silence, and we're all good friends, and we sat there in silence for, you know, a good 10 minutes before I just go, I think you guys know. And they're like, yeah, that he's playing. Do you know? I'm like, of course we know. And then we figured it out. And like, they had to bring in like a full on extra camera crew overnight. Like, it was cool to see like the full resources of ESPN come together to get like another camera crew in. And then they wanted to get the document. I mean, this isn't like a quick, you know, 5-second news story. This is a 30-minute piece that's coming out. So then they wanted to get the piece out to be the first major, like, comprehensive national hit after he played. Sure. So then he snaps on that Saturday. ESPN films. They all fly out to Bristol. And they literally had like 2 edit rooms to cut up all the footage, working like 24/7 for a week to get it out the next Sunday on E60. But no, and he, I mean, so we're off topic, but I just remember that, all of that very well. It was crazy.
That is insane.
Being down on the sideline, because there was no way I wasn't gonna be on the sideline.
Oh yeah.
I remember being down on the sideline for that game, and originally they thought it was gonna be like a blowout, and that Jake would snap in the second quarter. Okay. But that wasn't really happening. And like, even until the fourth quarter, the game was kind of tight. So I texted my dad, because it was only like a 2-score game. Yeah. I texted my dad with like 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I'm like, hey, I know I canceled my flights. Can you rebook everything? I think I'm going to come home.
It's not happening.
My dad texted me back. He goes, no, don't worry. There's going to be a pick six. Like, he's going to get in. 2 minutes later, we have a pick six. Jake gets in to snap. And the coolest thing about that, and I get goosebumps thinking about it, is like, I knew, that's one of those rare special things where, yeah, like, I knew as that was happening, I'm like, okay, life's going to be a lot different after this moment.
Like, oh, I bet.
There's everything before this and there's everything after that.
Right.
And then, yeah, he snapped and like, it was crazy. I mean, like, that whole everything after that is a blur for like the next 3 weeks. I mean, I literally, like, USC Sports Information just like gave me an office in their athletic department complex. And it was just so much coming in all at once. It was, you know, there was the 36-hour stretch, as you said, where we after practice on a Thursday, we flew red eye to New York, landed in New York, no sleep. Jake went straight to Good Morning America, did Good Morning America live. Then Harry Connick Jr. had a show at the time. Harry sent a car, picked him up from Good Morning America. He did Harry Connick Jr., then back to Times Square to do the pre-production meeting for College Game Day, then dinner, then sleep, then woke up the next morning, did College Game Day live from Times Square, then flew back on Saturday morning. And that was all like 36 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was just the most chaotic, like, stressful. But we knew, right, like, it doesn't take a smart person, like, even an idiot could realize that, like, that was our chance to capitalize on everything, to set him up to be, you know, sort of figured out for the rest of his life. So we knew that, as crazy as it was, we had to make
it happen.
Everything work. So yeah, that was a unique process for sure.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Yeah. And I can't imagine the whirlwind that had to be and just completely overwhelming to young kids.
Work. Yeah, right, we still had schoolwork. I mean, I just turned 21. We're still figuring out all of, It's like figuring out all of his New York logistics. It was a nightmare. I look back, I'm not totally sure how I handled it. My phone would probably die like six times a day. But it was quite the experience.
Remind me to take your dad to Vegas because he's predicting pick sixes when you need
him. Yeah, I mean, it was unreal. It was unreal. Very, very lucky. Really glad it happened, obviously.
Let me ask you this, and I don't have any idea, but you guys have this friendship. You guys are you know, sweet mates. You're hanging out all the time. He goes in, he makes a snap. He comes off the sideline. You're on the sideline. What are you saying to him?
I don't even remember. I was so excited. I mean,
I wondered
he's so
if you would.
Calm and composed. I was definitely more nervous than he was.
Oh, I bet.
All I remember is like the one rule, since I'm not on the team, I'm not technically affiliated with the team, and we already skirted every imaginable line with compliance because I'm in the facilities all the time. I ate for free with the team. Like, I remember the one thing they told me was like, don't go over the bench after he snaps. Like, don't like actually, there's like, even when you're down the sidelines, there's like a taped off area for like players and staff only.
Okay.
Like, whatever you do, don't go into that area. And I remember after he snapped, I realized all bets are off. I'm like, I don't care. So I literally like jump over the bench that the players sit on because I know all my friends, and I just like hug Jake. I'm like, I'm so happy. But all I remember is I'm completely oblivious. And the Pac-12 obviously it was on the Pac-12 network.
Oh, yeah.
So they had a camera up close on Jake's face. And I just remember like I went to like hug Jake. And literally for a second, the entire TV shot, my friends were sending photos, just my face. Cause I was like right in front of the Pac-12 camera until they like shoved me away. And I honestly don't remember what I said to him. It was so like delirious. Like we were just so happy. And I remember right as the game was ending and we were about to jog out to midfield for like post-game handshakes, USC's sports information director comes up, Tim Tessalone, man's a legend, great guy, comes up and taps me on the shoulder. And I think he's going to tell me, get off this part of the sideline. He just taps me on the shoulder and he goes, you ready? You've got it from here. And I had no idea what he was talking about. And then he just disappears. We jog out to midfield. The whole thing was, craziness.
Completely surreal.
Yeah, completely surreal.
That's amazing. So through all this, you and Jake form a friendship. You form a partnership.
Yeah.
And with Jake doing public speaking, you have now formed a company. It is a company called Engage that is looking to help other college athletes that are working to get some name and likeness opportunities. Daniel, tell me a little bit about what Engage does for prospective clients.
Yeah. So basically after Jake snapped, speaking of things that changed, his speaking demand exploded, right? He started getting so many requests. And around the same time, a couple weeks after that, I got a call from Ryan Harris, who played on the Broncos for a long time, won a Super Bowl. He was doing a show in Altitude, still doing a show in Altitude. And he called me, don't know how he got my number, and was like, hey, you know, I'm doing a lot of speaking. Would you want to manage my speaking engagements?
I was like, okay.
Why? Like what? Why me? But he's just a really good guy. So basically the business got started because I was managing Jake. And then I took over managing Ryan and I still manage him. So I was managing all of his speaking engagements. And originally the business got started and like, look, this process is super inefficient. Like I shouldn't be faxing people contracts, you know, in 2017. Like that's ridiculous.
Right.
So originally set out looking for a platform that would just make it easier for people to find and book Jake and Ryan and my clients, found that there really wasn't one to use. So called a bunch of the athletes and agents and sort of talent that I knew and that Jake knew. And the feedback we got was like, look, it's actually a really inefficient system. And because it takes just as long to negotiate a $200,000 appearance as a $10,000 appearance, agents will only be able to focus on, you know, 1 or 2% of their guys. And the only companies that could get talent were companies that had huge budgets to spend. So we originally built Engage as a platform to make it easier for companies to find and connect with all types of talent, whether it's athletes, speakers, authors, just to book them for speaking engagements and appearances. So that was the core business. It's still our core business. It's a really good spot to be in. And what happened was we had this idea, but we didn't really know how to execute. I mean, we had no idea how to execute it.
Right.
We had this idea, and one of the guys who'd seen Jake snap was a guy named John Shigarian, who runs a company called Electronic Recyclers International. It's the largest recycler of e-waste in the country. And he reached out and was like, look, I want Jake to come speak to my company in December. Like, let's have lunch in November. So we had lunch in November and we still have this idea. It's like November 2017. We still have this idea. And I remember I'm meeting John at the parking lot to pick him up and walk him over to lunch with Jake. And I call Jake and I'm like, Jake, I just read John's bio. First words out of your mouth. We didn't even have a company name at this point. I'm like, right. First words out of your mouth, like, need to be about our company. Cause this dude will invest in the spot. Like, he will invest on the spot. And Jake's like, okay, sure. So we sit down and John goes, you know, Jake, what are you passionate about? Jake starts talking about the idea. Before Jake can even finish, John is like, do you have investors? And we're like, no, we haven't even. He's like, do you have an idea? Like, what do you have? And we're like, nothing. He goes, I'll be your first investor. Don't worry about it.
Wow.
And ended up like funding all of our technology, hiring our lawyers, a whole bunch of like buying domain name, whole bunch of things. So still a good friend and investor.
Sure.
But
sure.
From there, he kind of got us off the ground.
Okay.
And we started growing. You know, now we work with over 3,000 different athlete speakers and everything.
Yeah.
And we work with a lot of agencies who use our platform to help their guys get booked for more speaking engagements.
Okay.
So we were really growing a lot in that space and still are growing a lot in that space. And then when the NIL stuff came out on July 1st, we had a few lucky things happen our way where ESPN did a huge feature on our company, and what we were planning to do in the NIL space because they knew about Jake's waiver and everything.
Sure.
So they did a huge feature. And then they decided to wait to release it until like June 28th. So right before these NIL things happened. So July 1st hits, we had no plan for NIL. We had anyone who says they have a plan, totally lying.
Let's see what happens. In fact, yeah.
I was thinking I don't know how big the market's going to be to start, like whatever. We had no plan. July 1st hits. I was in Aspen on vacation and July 1st hits. Our piece had just come out. And no one had any idea what they were doing. But because that ESPN piece came out, everyone thought we just knew what we were doing. And I probably talked to, 45 athletes in 2 days because we had a lot of friends playing college football across the country, college basketball across the country.
Okay.
So I probably talked to 45 different athletes in 2 days. And over those course of those conversations, realized right away that, yes, it was good if we could use our technology to help bring them opportunities and bring them deals. And we do that. We do a lot of that. But really what a lot of these athletes who were reaching out to me directly needed was guidance. They needed help negotiating the stuff that came in for them. They needed help navigating all of that. They needed help picking agents, all those things. So we sort of with NIL really quickly realized that we can continue to work with agencies to bring deals to their NIL clients, the guys they're recruiting and signing. And we can work personally with kids to help manage all of their NIL. So that's sort of what we do on the NIL side. So it's everything from, helping agencies get their guys social media deals, get their guys speaking deals, get their guys all types of deals, to helping a kid like Armando Baycott, who's one of my friends on North Carolina, to helping handle all of his NIL. So all the deals that come in, or, another good example is Kendall Brown at Baylor, who had a lot coming in, one and done kid this year, had a lot coming in. And his dad was like, look, I'm not even worried about you going out and sourcing deals. He's like, can you just help me navigate all this process with doing all these deals, making sure he's, not just getting paid, but getting what he's worth, not signing anything that jeopardizes him for the long term. So just teaching and educating these kids on all of that. So that's sort of what we've been doing in the NIL space. And it's been really, really fascinating for us. Very profitable too, which has been a nice thing. I definitely underestimated how big the market would get so fast. So I'm glad that that didn't cost us because we sort of had it fall into our laps, but it's been a really fascinating stretch for us.
Well, and one cool thing that I really like that you do is that Engage puts kind of that broker cost on the organizations that are looking for the service instead of charging these kids, these clients that really don't know what they're getting into.
Yes.
You don't take a slice for them. You say, hey, if you want to come sign them, you've got to pay for that.
Yeah,
I love that aspect of it because you're protecting these kids that don't always know what to do.
Exactly. Our whole thing with our platform, right, is there's no downside. Like Jake's my client or whatever. I manage Jake. I don't have a contract with Jake. I don't have a contract with Ryan Harris. They could fire me at any point. It's totally non-exclusive. All these things. Will I get burned by that at some point? Absolutely. I haven't yet because, like, for me, it's about, I don't want there to be downside for people because that creates risks, that creates broken promises. Right. So for me, it's like, how do we create something that has only upside to get people excited about it so that they can trust us and want to work with us, not have to work with us? And that's kind of how we've been able to build our business.
Daniel, because of the business that you are running, we've talked about it. You are doing this NIL stuff. I would assume you've got to be like an expert. You've got to know the rules, the regulations, what's not allowed.
As much as possible. I think what's not allowed basically at this point is nothing. I mean, like it's the wild west right now. I mean, like the idea of enforcing any of these rules has been punted on. I know kids, you know, some of these collectives, right? You got collectives, which are basically groups of donors at schools getting together to do NIL deals with players.
Right.
Functionally, what they're doing is just giving recruits money to come to their school. I mean, I have a kid who got, you know, a few hundred grand or whatever, and they're saying, oh, you don't have to do anything. You can just show up. And I'm like, no, he does have to do something.
Gotta do something.
Pretty much the only rule that you can't, like, the only rule that you have to follow is that there is something, you do something for the money you receive. So no, he does have to do something. Like, we're going to put that into the contract. Like, we need that in writing. So
yes,
it's been a fascinating, like,
I bet,
fascinating stretch, because it really is anything goes. And, you know, schools, July 1st through 8th, school compliance departments were looking for reasons to say no. They were hesitant. They were skeptical, all those things. Literally a week in, they realized how important it was going to be for recruiting. So it went from how can we stop deals to happening to how can the school walk all the way up to the line of being involved without formally being involved.
Of course.
It's completely flipped.
So I'll be honest with you. I am a little bit old school. I told you I coached high school basketball. It's still a little bit weird to me that college athletes are getting paid, but I'm coming around on it.
Yeah.
I do think there's some hurdles that we're going to face eventually. But I mean, I look at it and I say, let's say we had a film class at USC, and we know USC is very, you know, good with the film stuff. And that class made a movie, and the movie made money, and the students didn't get any of the money. We'd go, what is the university doing? They're ripping off these kids. Of course they should get paid.
I mean, look,
it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's even more egregious than that. It's like, think about this. If I am a coding whiz and USC gives me an academic scholarship to code, I can go work at Apple and get paid by Apple, and and people wouldn't say, oh, well, USC is giving you a scholarship, you should work there for free. It's like, no, it's about getting what you're worth. Like, yes, those kids get an education and a scholarship, but they're worth so much more to that than the university.
Right.
So it's not even about the universities paying these kids. In no other industry or field are you restricted from making money off of your own name, image, and likeness. That's all it's about. So these deals should absolutely, I mean, USC sold Jake's jersey in the bookstore and Jake didn't make any money off of that.
Right.
Like, you can't say, oh, he gets a scholarship, it's okay. That's like saying, oh, in your job, you make enough money to live. That's great. You're not allowed to ask your boss for a raise. Like, people be like, that's ridiculous. If you're worth more, you should get paid more. So, like, I've long been a fan of a free market solution for NIL because it's just basic. And it's the same thing with the transfer portal. Kids are like, people are saying, oh, these kids shouldn't be able to transfer. I'm sorry, if you're a coach, you can leave in the middle of the season and go anywhere for a better job with no repercussions. Like, so it's just about evening the playing field and giving the same rights to these kids that literally everybody else has. For example, you know, I know USC did a giveaway where before NIL, where students could get free scooters if they posted about it on social media. Athletes, all other students could get it except athletes
can't do it
because it was impermissible benefits. So
right.
That whole thing was so long overdue. And because the NCAA tried for so long to stop any of it from happening, they ended up losing control all at once. There was no plan in place. So they ended up losing control all at once. They lost that antitrust case in the Supreme Court. And then they just sort of said, whatever, we're not going to really enforce anything. They haven't, not a single school. I mean, I have seen some of the most egregious violations of these NIL rules. Not a single school has been disciplined. The NCAA is completely toothless. Like, nobody cares right now.
Well, what can the NCAA at this point even do? They have no power.
Right? No, they have no power. It's a great thing to see. They serve no value. Like, it's a great thing to see. And I think, look, you know, with anything, right? Of course, there are downsides to NIL. There are kids taking advantage of. There are people making decisions for the wrong reason. Of course, there are. Not delusional. Nothing's perfect. But on the whole, it's been a massive net positive. I look at. I'll use Armando Bacot again as an example. We just did a partnership for him to endorse a charity in the North Carolina area that raises money for families who have kids dealing with life-altering medical conditions and crippling expenses as a result. What a great use. He's using his name, image, and likeness to help raise far more than he's being, you know, paid to endorse the charity. And that would have been illegal by NIL rules. Yeah. Like, it's so there's so much good that is happening that it vastly outweighs the bad. You have people who have no pro potential who are finally able to capitalize on their earning window. Like, it's just a really, really good thing to see.
Daniel, do you worry at all about any kind of like revenue sharing model where there's, you know, equity to different members, maybe on the same team, maybe different sports, like Title IX kind of stuff where, hey, females might not make the money that, or is this just free enterprise? And we say, hey, what you can make is what you can make. And that's just where it is. Is there any concern for that equity?
I don't know. I think thus far there really hasn't been. And it's like, look, it's something that I'm less concerned about. Look at the NBA.
Right.
LeBron James makes more money than Talen Horton Tucker because he's worth more to the Lakers.
Yeah.
That's like, that's how the world works at the
sports level. Right.
So like, and that's what's happening in NIL. For the most part, it's fair market value. If a company realizes that doing a deal with you is going to get the most ROI with them, they will pay more. Like, they're going to pay for the athletes who have the most ROI for their brand. That's just good business. So look, I think everyone's able to get something, and the better players, like, that's just how it works. The better players are always going to get more.
Yeah.
Like, CJ Stroud's going to get a Bentley. Ohio State's third string offensive lineman is not going to get a Bentley.
Right.
And that's
right.
Because CJ Stroud is more marketable and worth more to school. The same thing happens in the NFL, and no one's saying, oh my God, why does Dalton Risner not have the same endorsement deals as Russell Wilson?
Right.
Everyone realizes it just makes sense. Like, that's how it goes. So I'm not concerned about it. I think one of the things that excites me actually is we've seen so much success with women's athletes getting NIL deals and getting opportunities, and not just women's basketball. I'm talking softball and volleyball and all those things. So that's been really cool to see is brands realize the value of investing in women's sports, and they realize the importance of doing it equitably. So the market has valued that and put good money into it. So it's been really good to see, because you know how egregiously low salaries are in women's professional sports.
Right.
So it's been really cool to see these college athletes start putting money in their pockets now, and understanding financial literacy now, and capitalizing on this window as a result of NIL. So it's been, in my opinion, it's been fantastic for female athletes too.
I know that there's a little bit of a narrative out there that says, well, this is just going to help the rich get richer. The Alabamas, the Clemsons, they're just going to keep winning and winning and winning. I look at it in a little bit different light. I say, well, now this does open things up, because we know Nick Saban has had the run of an era ever. We get it. But now there's nothing saying you can't go out there and compete with him. There's nothing that says A&M can't go out there and recruit too, because hey, they've got boosters too. Maybe this evens the playing field more than people think it's going to.
Yeah. And again, if it doesn't, I don't care. Before NIL, basically every CFP was won by Alabama or Clemson.
You're right.
It's not like it was even before. It was already highly regionalized. The only, like, the westernmost team to win a college football championship in the CFP era is Ohio State.
Yep.
Like, it was already very regionalized. It was already very few programs, because guess what? These schools were already doing that. Talk to any student athlete who's recruited in the South, and they will tell, I mean, I have multiple friends who will tell me stories of having coaches drop off duffel bags of 10 grand, 20 grand, 30 grand. And these aren't even five-star kids. So it was already happening.
Yes.
So like, I just can't bring myself to care about that argument, because it was just already happening.
Okay, coming back. We still have a number of things to discuss with Daniel Hennis today. And I have a number of questions about all this name, image, and likeness stuff. I know that we are being told this stuff is to help the kids. Will it actually do that? Are there any drawbacks or obstacles that he is seeing? And what are the things that he is looking for in prospective clients, both good or bad? We're going to finish up our conversation with Engage CEO Daniel Hennis when we get back. Do you worry at all? And I'm right there with you. I look at it and say, hey, this stuff was already happening. I get that. Do you worry at all about the improper recruiting? Because my thing is this, my thing is always, this is supposed to be about the kids, right?
Right.
This isn't about like the old businessmen in the conference room getting what's best for them, right? It's supposed to be about the kids.
Yes.
I do worry, are we going to start paying, you know, 9th graders, 10th graders, that kind of thing, getting into inducement for athletes to maybe go to this school?
It's happening. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is happening. Is that a huge concern?
Yeah. That's the biggest downside for me right now. It's a huge concern because here's the thing. So I tell all the kids I work with, no amount of NIL money you get, no amount of anything like will be worth a professional contract. You need to go to school. Like if your goal is to play in the NFL and like, look, I know statistically, blah, 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 really you should go to the best academic school that can prepare you for life after football, blah, blah, blah. That aside, because that's realistically not how these kids make their decisions.
No, they don't think
they want to get to the league.
Kids.
So fine. You want to get to the league. You need to go to the school that has the best track record and the coaching staff that has the best track record of building, growing, and developing players for that next level, because that's going to be worth more than the NIL money you get now. So I think what's happening is schools are buying kids with NIL money, which is great for the short-term benefit to your bank account,
right,
but will actually cost you money in the long term. And I think what's happening too, and one of the things that's of a concern to some of the coaches we'll talk to is, right, you've got boosters who are so involved that they're basically the GM now. They're saying, oh, the transfer portal, we're going to go in and offer this kid $800K and we're going to get him to come here. Too bad. I don't care if you want him or not. He's coming like you want him now. So I think that's been kind of a concern.
Yeah. Well, and seeing in that, along those same lines, you know, there's inducements for kids to transfer. We know that's happening. Boosters will come and say, hey, transfer over here. My concern, again, because our worry is for the kids, right, is that a kid is putting his name into transfer. Once he kind of severs that tie with the school he was at, and then maybe the school that was talking to him, it kind of pulls off, hey, we don't want you. That kid's stuck. I'm more worried about that kid.
Yeah, it's happening 100%, and it's a risky situation for sure.
Yeah. What do you do? Do you coach these kids up? Do you coach up, you know, mom and dad? What do you do to kind of try to avoid some of these traps?
Yeah, I just don't work with kids who think like that, because it's not our core business. I can't bother. I can't handle myself. So the people we work with personally on an NIL level are people who have their heads screwed on right. I don't recruit kids because, again, we can't be competing with agents. The people I manage the NIL stuff for are all people who are referred to me by word of mouth. And the first thing I ask them is how they think about it.
Yeah.
And if they think about it the wrong way, there were multiple kids we said no to this year because they just didn't think about it the wrong way. So we avoid that. We're in a really luxurious position, right, where we're well-funded and the speaking business does really well.
Right.
So someone like Armando, who comes to me and says, you know, I'm thinking about how NIL can set me up to build generational wealth and get all these business connections, jump at the chance to work with him.
Sure.
And we've had a lot of success. Someone like some of the other guys who are like, I just want to make as much money as possible, doesn't work for us.
What's a red flag for you? You talk to a kid, you're having this conversation. What's one that you just go, whoa, this might not go well?
When they're like, what deals do you have for me right now?
Okay.
Before we even start working together.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I ask them what they're interested in and it's making money. I ask them, you know, what their expectations are and they think they can make $1 million. It's just like when we're not aligned. And then look, some people are the right fit for them. In that case, we're not. And it's when we're not aligned and you can just tell. I love being able to talk to the parents and the whole family. I mean, you can just tell. And when you're not aligned, you say, you know, it's all good. Like, thank you so much. This isn't a fit and it's totally fine.
Now, this is just me and I'm not a very smart guy, but I have always felt going back to the past few years, the best way to handle this is to have companies like yourself, to have agents like yourself that are reputable, that are ethical, that are going to do what is best for these kids, because there are boosters out there that will lie. Yeah. That hey, sometimes this isn't even a contract. Sometimes, like you said, this is word of mouth a lot of times. Yeah. Hey, we'll give you this amount of money. That is looking out for these kids' best interest. When I see something like what you're doing and you're looking out for these kids and saying, hey, let's find you the best situation because you're going to be lied to a lot. That is the direction I think this has to go in. That's why I'm fully on board with what you're doing.
And we'll see. Look, I think the tricky thing, right? And I think one of the benefits we have going for us is we're not agents. I'm not trying to sign these kids.
Yep.
I'm not trying to sign these kids to represent their NBA contract or the NFL contract.
Sure.
I'm really just here to help with NIL. So because of that, I'm able to use the expertise and stuff that I built with Jake. And I'm also not trying to shove bad deals down their throat to get them to try to sign with me at a later date. So a lot of the worst deals are coming from agents who are trying to make it look like they're doing something for these kids. So they're forcing them into long-term bad deals so that they can look valuable because they think it'll help them sign the kid to go pro.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. This is probably getting way too far ahead. And that's all right, because it's fun to play fantasy. But let me ask you this. Do you see an NIL? Do you see like maybe a salary cap coming for these kids? Hey, there's a certain amount each program, I guess, can kind of earn, or each kid can kind of earn. Because again, as much as it's supposed to be about the kids, we know the old men in the boardroom are going to be going, hey, we're spending too much money. So do you see something like that coming?
Or no, how are there's they not going to be a salary cap. You can't, NCAA can't do that antitrust stuff. There won't be any caps to NIL earnings. What is going to happen is boosters are going to realize giving an 18-year-old $1 million is a really risky investment.
Yeah.
Like maybe we don't want to keep doing this. When you donate to the university, you get a tax write-off. When you give the money to the kids, you don't get that anymore. So it's a less sustainable, less evergreen type of thing. So where I do think, it's interesting you bring that up, where I do think we'll see a shift is in how boosters perceive the market and their willingness to spend on unproven commodities.
Okay. Do we see eventually, and I know this is probably going too deep into the you know, sports or whatever, do we see eventually where these conferences, NCAA, we're done, we're breaking off, we're going and doing our own thing, we're going to set our own salary caps, we're going to do our own thing? Is that what's coming?
Yes, I think so.
I think it is too.
Unless the NCAA hires a really dynamic new president, which I'm sorry, couldn't pay me enough to take that job right now.
No way. It's a no win.
Yeah. And here's the thing, you know, we had one of our partners who's very plugged into all this stuff. He explained to us, he's like, look, the NCAA hires a new president. Let's say that process takes 10 months.
Right.
Then the new president brings in his own people. That process brings 10 months. Then they start getting to work on figuring things out. They've lost basically 2 years.
Yeah.
2-3 years.
Yeah.
At that point, there's nothing left for them to figure out because everyone's gone off on their own.
Everyone's already gone. Yeah. I think that's absolutely where this is headed. What about, could you put in, and you know this more than I do, could you put in, hey, your NIL is dependent upon your academic requirements or behavior requirements. Is that kind of stuff coming maybe?
So you can't do anything related to your play on the field. There can't be any incentive bonuses.
Sure.
And there can be some academic stuff, I believe, but that gets really tricky because your NIL deals can't be contingent on your enrollment in an institution. Like you can't have a deal that says you get X amount of money if you get this GPA at USC. Because it can't be contingent on where you go to school. It has to be nothing to do with where you go to school. So I haven't seen anything like that. And I don't think we will because it gets tricky. And also athletes don't want anything tied to their grades.
No, of course not.
Just like I mean, I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either if I had a full-time job for 40 hours a week and had to do more than that and had to do school on the side. That's like having my compensation at Engage tied to like how good I am at dunking a basketball. That would be ludicrous. Right. Like that would be ludicrous. So yeah, I don't think we'll see much of that. We'll see a lot of changes. I don't think we'll see a cap, and I don't think we'll see anything tied to like pay for play.
Okay. That's very, very good information. Yeah. Very interesting.
I could be wrong because things change every day.
But well,
that's
they do
thing right now.
That's what I guess I'm looking at this now and I'm saying, okay, we kind of know right now it's the Wild West. I'm kind of looking at going, where is this going? Where is this going to head? Because it's just so weird. There's
it's
so many
the Wild West for a while.
Well, it kind of has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Until everything kind of settles, and then we can look and say, okay, maybe we limit some things here. Maybe we change some things here. But it's also hard. There's no governing body right now. Who's going to tell anybody anything? Not the NCAA. Yeah. I mean, there's just no way. Is there any ideas or any transparency to what guys are getting paid, or is that just all?
I have a good set. Like some guys talk, other guys don't talk.
Yeah.
You know, we have a pretty good sense, like because we're not agents, other agents will tell us what other guys are getting. Will tell us. So like, I have a pretty good sense. Yeah. I think a lot of guys I will know what a company actually spent and they'll say a different thing.
Okay.
So I do think a lot of guys overestimate it. But there's some, like I have a pretty good insight into who's getting what. They're definitely guys who made millions of dollars.
Are they making millions of dollars for actually doing anything?
Trading cards and memorabilia.
Okay.
Those are the big ones. those companies are spending huge money.
That's where the money's at.
Yeah.
Is trading cards at. Memorabilia?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's very, very interesting.
That's where the money's at. And then what you have happening too is you've got, you know, let's say an agent wants to sign a quarterback at a school, right?
Okay.
And they're at a mega agency and you want to represent this kid's NIL.
Yeah.
So you're at this mega agency and not only do you represent athletes, but you also represent companies. And let's say there's a clothing company. I'm just blocking out. I mean, this is a real thing that happens. So I'm just blurring out the names. Of
I understand. Involved.
But let's say you want to sign a quarterback at a university and you also represent a company, a clothing company that spends a lot of money on talent endorsements, and you have complete control over their budget and how they spend it, and they don't really pay any attention. So if you're this agency, what you do is you go to this quarterback and you say, hey, we have this deal for you from this clothing company for $250,000. Look at this deal we just brought you. Imagine what we could do if you signed with us. And then that's how they sign them. So it's functionally bribing the kid with, even though the kid's not worth that amount of money, the brand could get better use of their money.
Yep.
This agency happens to represent the brand and they want to represent the kid. So they do that. And then you have kids getting, you know, multiple six-figure deals when they're not even worth it, just because the agency controls the brand's procurement budget. So yes, there are kids making real money for doing things, but it's all kind of questionable.
This is absolutely fascinating and just super interesting to me to look at, you know, some of the things that are changing, some of the direction this is going, and then to look at how you guys are kind of handling this and what you're doing at your end. It's just, it's super, super interesting to me. I'm hoping that, again, this ends up being what is best for the kids. I believe so much of it is.
Yeah.
I think it can be good for college athletics in general. I think
kids will stay in school longer.
Right. We saw that this year.
I had multiple kids come back to school because they knew they could afford to live.
Right. And they don't have to say, hey, I'm one and done and I have to be one and done because my family needs money. Yeah. I need money. I've got to jump. We're seeing one of the best basketball players in the country, probably a lottery pick, go back to Kentucky and say, no, I don't have to jump now.
Yep.
Well, I'd rather see the development of kids. I'd rather see him develop his game and grow up a little more as a person.
Yep.
That to me can't be a bad thing, can it?
No, it's a great thing. It's a great thing. It's a great thing. And it's been really exciting to see that development.
Well, I absolutely love what you are doing. I think it is a really cool situation that, again, you're looking out for these kids because that is supposed to be our bottom line. It is supposed to be, let's look out for the youth and kind of take care of them because they don't know how to maneuver their way through this. I would much rather see that than see the shady agents get involved and what can we get out of this kid and suck him dry before he leaves and we can't make any money off of him. Yep. I would much rather see that. Daniel, where can people go to find your company, to find information about your company?
Yep.
Where is the best place to go?
Yeah. So our website is letsengage.com.
Okay.
And then our social media handles are Book with Engage. Yep,
make sure you look for that on social media. I could sit here and talk to you about this all day because it is a fascinating conversation, but I won't continue to waste your time.
No,
but,
it's been a blast.
But Daniel Hannes, thank you so much for stopping by the Daily Dose. It was really, really interesting to hear what you have going, and I wish you all nothing but the best going forward.
Of course. Thanks so much, Glenn.
Hey, next week on The Dose, we will be doing our best to bring you the latest and greatest in the world of sports. And, you know, like we talked about earlier, the Stanley Cup Finals are now underway. The NBA Finals are finishing up. We will still have a lot to discuss here at The Dose, so be sure you stop by and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to Engage CEO Daniel Hennis for stopping by and telling us some amazing stories about how all of this came to be and for shedding some insight on all of that NIL stuff. You are more than welcome to join us anytime. And I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.